This is Brains and Losses, the bottom line on aging and financial vulnerability, a special from Marketplace. I'm David Brancaccio.
I just knew I had to go to Walmart, knew what kind of cars he wanted me to get. Get in the car, tear off the back, give him the numbers.
I'm in the car with Judy Fern as she threads her Honda CR-V down this street in Margate, New Jersey. She moved out here from California some years ago to care for a daughter with cancer. She points to the daughter's old place.
There used to be a cute little house. See that brown house?
Your daughter got sick in her 40s?
Yeah. It was ugly. It was a shame. But you marshal on.
Judy is 79 years old, a registered nurse who, well into what most would consider their retirement years, subs as a fill-in nurse for several school districts. She goes to Pilates, does math in her head better than me. But in November 2017, she lost nearly $200,000 in a scam that unfolded over 2 weeks.
My Pilates people were saying, where have you been? And I couldn't tell them. I was embarrassed to tell them. So I just said I couldn't make it.
And now we're setting out to revisit the scene of the crime, the gift card rack at Walmart.
It was Thanksgiving weekend, and I was just hanging around the house answering the phone like a fool. I didn't know. And he said, I'm from Microsoft. You're having a problem with your computer. I have to get into it to help you fix it.
We don't know who this guy was, but let's just stipulate it was not Microsoft. The year in question, Microsoft compiled 153,000 complaints about tech support scams around the world. 1 in 7 people lost money. Judy clicked to give the guy remote access. I know, Judy, don't do it. But she did, and watched as her computer was taken over.
I let him in, and I remember saying to one of them, I love it when you take my cursor and just move it around. I look back, and I can't imagine what I was thinking. I was like a robot.
The scammer who takes control of Judy's computer directs her attention to what looks on her screen like a readout from one of her accounts at U.S. Bank.
He wanted to show me it was at 000, and you can make it up if you do what I say.
She should have had $29,819, but on that November day, bank records show something super strange happened. In several chunks, tens of thousands of dollars are transferred out of this one account into another one of Judy's accounts. This could create the temporary appearance that the bank account had run dry. The FTC says this happens all the time. Moving money between accounts doesn't raise red flags, but it does scare people into a scam. What happens to Judy next becomes an odyssey out of Greek tragedy. Judy was led to believe that if she gave the caller more money, she'd get all of it back.
Now you go out to Walmart. I said, it's dark and cold. Now? He said, yes, you must go to Walmart. You must get gift cards.
Gift cards. Scratch off the codes on the back and read them over the phone, and the money you put on the card goes to whomever you tell, like the man who identified himself as Jeff. Judy says he pushed her into 24 trips to Walmart and a Target over a 2-week period for cards worth at least $1,000 each.
I was driving, clenching the wheel. I'm so mad, and I couldn't figure out, as I thought about it, if I'm mad at him or mad at me. No kidding. I mean, why am I out here on this freaking road again, driving all the way out to Walmart?
People 50 and older hold 83% of the wealth in America, with households headed by people in their 70s and 80s having the highest median net worth. That makes them prime targets. The effects can be devastating. Donna Maddox, a federal prosecutor in Oregon, says the stakes are especially high for older victims who have less time to recover from financial loss.
They are then dependent on their family, their friends, and on the public system as well.
Here's the big issue. Not only are older people heavily targeted, but surprising data suggests that as we get older, we become more vulnerable to this kind of stuff, the pitches, the spam, the outright fraud. Sadly, this is obvious in cases of dementia. But here's the part that really floors me. Doctors are studying older people who are on the ball, A-OK, people who, when tested, seem to have no diagnosable cognitive impairment, but who may still be at special risk from those who want to take their money, be it strangers or family. There's brain research about this, as we'll learn. In some cases, it's like a person's radar for scams goes dark. With an aging population, this is an elder justice issue, a personal finance issue, and a public policy issue. A widely cited study by a financial services firm catering to seniors calculated that older people lose about $36 billion a year from financial exploitation. An older study by another financial company came up with $3 billion a year, but it's a hard number to pin down when a third study out of New York estimated as few as 1 in 44 cases are ever reported.
Gift cards, a whole lot of gift cards.
On Judy's small circular kitchen table, we laid out all the used cards, piles and piles of them, covering every available space on the table. We look at one of the credit card statements listing the gift card purchases.
Target, $2,000.
Oh, Judy. And then on the 1st of December, it keeps going. Oh, do I miss one? Walmart Supercenter in Egg Harbor, New Jersey. I missed that one on 11/30. For how much?
For $6,000. All right, 33, 37, 41, 43, 45.
$45,000 of gift cards. Judy, Judy, Judy. Several clerks at Walmart had even warned Judy she might be getting scammed. Gift cards are a favorite method of scammers to move money without much trace, and recently many big stores have been changing the rules around gift cards. But again, Judy held out hope that if she did what the guy on the phone said, she'd get all her money back. All in all, there were over 100 used Target and Walmart cards, and she kept the receipts. Total, $166,000. And that's not all. Scammers also talked her into a bank transfer, $45,000 to a company in Nepal. Judy lost, by my calculation, about $196,000. For a school nurse who's working a couple days a week, that's a lot of money.
Well, you could say that, yeah.
It could have been worse, but one of her credit card companies reversed nearly $25,000, agreeing it was fraud. Eventually, Judy says her tormentor showed her on her computer a $200,000 check written out in her name with the promise it would make her whole if she gave him more money still.
And it was completely fraudulent, I could tell, because the comma was in the wrong place and the zeros were, it was not right.
At this point, she was done and cut off communication, her accounts ravaged. All this was paid for through savings, retirement money, and running up credit cards, with the scammer telling her to call and raise her credit limit. So how does this happen? Experts say something called decision theory can be part of the logic, the way people calculate what it's worth to put more money in if there's a chance of getting money back. There's also fear. Judy says when she wised up after a week and started pushing back on the caller, things got menacing with implied threats against her family. Now, maybe this could happen to any of us at any age, but it's possible there's also something else at work with some older scam victims.
The most frustrating people in my science and in my clinical practice are people who test up and down neuropsychologically normal. I mean, they've had the million-dollar neurologic workup. And yet they still give away the farm in ways that they would not have when they were younger.
Mark Lax is a physician at Weill Cornell Medicine in New York, one of New York City's biggest hospitals. His focus is on elderly patients. He and his colleagues have put a label on what they see as an all-too-common condition, age-associated financial vulnerability.
The 80-year-olds have slower finishing times in the New York City Marathon than the 20-year-olds, and that's just a law of physiology and physics. And so we're learning that there are changes in the aging brain, even in the absence of diseases like Alzheimer's disease or other neurodegenerative illnesses that may render older adults vulnerable to financial exploitation.
While experts believe wisdom and life experience can help counteract age-related changes, there's neuroscience and psychological data suggesting our ability to detect sketchy situations may decline. Or we may become prone to seeing the upside of a risky deal and blow off the downside. You see, the phenomenon goes way beyond changes in the brain. Marty DeLima is a research scholar at the Stanford Center on Longevity.
It also involves all of these other social and environmental factors, like social isolation, like cultural factors and societal factors, like older adults having more wealth compared to younger generations.
Take DeLima's first point, social isolation. Older people as a group are more likely to live alone. Judy's husband, Bob, died in a plane crash 12 years earlier, and her daughter died of cancer. Without a strong support system around to act as a second set of eyes and ears, people can fall into financial traps. Still, researchers looking into age-related financial vulnerability are very interested in physical changes to the aging brain, the way eyesight and hearing can get less keen. In some cases, a new pattern making mistakes with money may be a harbinger of cognitive bad things to come, the first thing to go, as it were. Could falling for scams be one warning signal for later Alzheimer's? Researchers right now are studying how the normal, healthy brain might change over time. There's a famous UCLA study Lax likes to refer to where pictures of menacing faces and trustworthy faces are shown to young and old.
And the normal older people could not discern trustworthy faces
as effectively as younger people tested. He's not the only one studying this stuff. McGill University neuroscientist Nathan Spreng was able to track down 13 elderly scam victims and 13 others equivalent in age, gender, and education who had successfully fended off a scam. And check this out. Spreng's research found the brains of the two groups were physically different.
So when we looked at the structural integrity of their brain, we identified one region in particular that was significantly smaller in those individuals who had been scammed than those who had not.
He noticed this around the piece of the brain called the insula, which may help us assess value and trigger what you might call your spidey sense, the hunch that can warn us away from dicey situations.
It gives you this body sense of the perceptions of the environment that something's not quite right. And it's a signal that all of us in life kind of need to learn how to listen to. And in the case of aging, that signal is just not as loud.
Another neuroscientist, Duke Hahn at the University of Southern California, also has access to a brain scanner. Hahn is hoping to find biomarkers for impaired financial decision-making. That's future tense, but not now. Someday. Hahn and Spreng are still in early stages of research, and some other experts are skeptical about practical applications of this.
I think it's not to the point where it really would pass the test as a clinical measure.
Peter Lichtenberg is director of the Institute of Gerontology at Wayne State University in Michigan. He's not a neuroscientist, but a psychologist who studies financial decision-making capacity. While he sees the brain scanning as promising, his experience tells him financial acumen and scam spotting are really complex matters.
There's no one aging pattern. You know, some older adults are as good as they were in their 50s and 60s. Others are showing a more significant decline.
A study even identified a peak age for handling money matters. On average, it's 53 years old. But this is a good time to remind ourselves of a crucial point that just because a person is 79, like Judy, or 66, or 93, those numbers alone don't tell the whole story about decision-making. One of those same neuroscientists we mentioned a second ago, Dr. Hahn at USC, agrees, and he helped develop the age-associated financial vulnerability definition.
Let me just take a step back and say not all older adults are automatically going to make poor financial decisions. My father is much older than I am. He's a much better financial decision maker than I ever will be, I'm convinced. And so we're really focusing on a portion of older adults that may be at particular risk.
Also, depending on the scam, people of all ages get taken, not just seniors. And Dr. Spreng, who studies the failing spidey sense for scams, notes that many older people seem to have an edge on their younger selves, an antidote to what we've been talking about. You might call it wisdom.
When we live a long time, we're able to see those repeating patterns that occur in the world and to glean information from them and provide a long view that younger adults don't necessarily have yet.
But while life experience counts, even non-scientists, including social workers and lawyers, have long wrestled with the broader problem.
What is it that makes one person exploitable and another person not?
Shannon Miller is an attorney based in Gainesville, Florida. She sees it all the time in her practice. A subset of older people who are not legally considered incapacitated are nonetheless extra vulnerable.
It's like a perfect storm, really, when we're talking about these vulnerable people who have enough capacity that they're not necessarily going to be on anybody's radar like their doctor.
Maybe until now. Coming up, who is behind the scams, and how can older people and their families protect themselves? In some cases, it's incredibly hard. We're looking at elder financial vulnerability right after the break. This is Brains and Losses, the bottom line on aging and financial vulnerability, a special report from Marketplace. I'm David Brancaccio. We're going to look more deeply now into how hard it can be to disentangle people from a scam. In Florida, the McClurg family was caught in the crosshairs of a fraudster and fought back. Andrew McClurg's father, Don, was a decorated gunnery sergeant who was kind of everywhere during the big one, both the Normandy and Okinawa invasions, and again in Tokyo Bay during the surrender. After, he got into the paint business in Florida and raised a family. In his 90s, his son Andrew found him sharp, good at numbers, good at tennis.
And I said, "You won a tennis tournament?" And I said, "Who are you playing?" He goes, "Oh, you know, the young guys in their 70s.
Don McClurg, recently widowed at the time, started talking about his new friend.
And in his case, he was just taking a walk around the block with his cane. And she pulled up and said, "Hey, do you know the directions to the hospital?" And so he gives her the directions. Next thing he remembers, she's calling him. Obviously, there was nothing sexual given his age, but in his, he gave a deposition to the detectives and admitted that at one point, you know, she would be talking about him as her boyfriend.
He's 93. She's saying she's 38. And her story was she needed money for cancer treatment. Don's wife had died from cancer, and the woman's tale resonated. I say tale because the family would later learn the cancer story was bunk. What she did have was a suspicious track record, including a recent previous marriage to a guy in his 80s, according to the private eye they hired. But Don, confronted with the kid's mounting evidence, was having none of it.
I mean, this is like months and months this went on, and we're in the thick of it. And we, each time something comes up, we've disproved it to him. And I said, "Dad, what's happening? What's wrong with you? Why won't you believe us?"
The real break for Andrew, who's a University of Memphis law professor, and his sister Robin, who's a former prosecutor, is when they found a police detective in their dad's town of Hollywood, Florida, who took a personal interest in the case. When briefed, the detective recognized the dad's new friend.
He goes, "I know exactly who she is. She's a con artist."
Detective Eddie Goldbach pays a visit to the dad to try to explain the situation. Don's quote-unquote friend persuades the dad to ban the cop from ever calling again. Authorities look into the case, but the weeks go on and on, and by then the woman has taken from Don more than $90,000.
At this point, he's Detective Goldbach's still trying to gather evidence, and God bless him, I just love this man. At one point, he said the prosecutor doesn't think there's enough evidence. I was deflated. We talked constantly on the phone, and he said, "But I'm just going to go arrest her today anyway. I've had enough of this." And so he did. And, of course, Robin and I are cheering, you know, "Go, Eddie, go, Eddie, go, Eddie." So they arrest the person who's stolen half of his life savings. and given him nothing in return other than this fake affection. And we get this email, my children, : I can't believe I am writing this to my children. The police just picked up my friend Marie and took her to jail. This is unbelievable. I wrote Eddie a letter recently telling him to close the case. He didn't reply, which is normal for him, but I didn't think this could happen. The ramifications are unbelievable. She was preparing to pay me in full. Yeah, right. This has been going on for a year.
Situations like these can be a challenge for the legal system.
What I like to call twisted heart cases.
You heard from Shannon Miller before the break. She's the Florida attorney who specializes in cases involving seniors. Her job can get complicated because figuring out the difference between a gift and a scam is, under law, tricky.
You know, the person can be very high functioning. So, you know, they're doing the gift intentionally.
But lawyers like Miller ask, what is intentional if the plea for cash is based on lies? At this point, you may be saying, why not get out the biggest piece of legal artillery available? Getting Don McClurg to agree or a judge to grant the kid's guardianship over his finances. Well, the challenge is, while the dad was in his 90s and acting in such a frustrating way, he otherwise seemed so with it.
We contacted Adult Protective Services. We contacted a lawyer who's an expert in guardianships and conservatorships. And I explained it, and he goes, I don't think you could win this. But he did also caution me. He goes, remember, the other side of this, if you succeed in this, there's a good chance you're going to destroy your relationship with your father.
Courts are not supposed to take lightly this solemn matter of taking away a person's right to control their own money and property. And it is not illegal in America to use money in ways that are unwise. The possibility that kids will take control of a parent's money and their independence is one of the reasons that seniors so radically underreport financial abuse.
They don't want to give up, who would, the control of their money and their life to someone else. And getting a forced conservatorship on someone often destroys that relationship.
Experts say these are conversations to have before a financial or health crisis hits. There is something called limited guardianship, where a judge grants only specified powers to a trusted person. There's the so-called springing power of attorney that's set up in advance and springs into action when someone's cognitive abilities decline past a certain predetermined threshold. Here's some advice from the Stanford Longevity Center's Marty DeLima.
I would set up a financial plan so that way I could bring in my loved ones, people I trust and who are trustworthy, into my financial decision-making process early. But really, by having these conversations, asking people to be those second sets of eyes and ears, you are maintaining financial control rather than just hoping that you don't go on to experience financial vulnerability in the future.
These are hard conversations to have. People worry their family members might have conflicts of interest or abuse their powers of conservatorship. One fraud victim I talked to said when she turned to her son for help, he was angry, suggesting that it was his money she'd lost, part of his inheritance. Again, here's Dr. Lichtenberg, a psychologist who studies financial decision-making capacity.
What's going on, though, is that there's a real chill between being able to talk to other family members about it because of a lack of trust, because of this sense that maybe my son or daughter will feel entitled. If I bring this topic up, maybe they're going to start asking me for money.
Among the tragedies here is that people are often more willing to talk to cold-calling strangers than family members. Lichtenberg says he has data showing 20% of older people admit when they do talk about money with others, it's out of loneliness.
This is my sister, Robin Taylor.
So, Robin, how are you?
I'm fine. Thanks for asking, David.
In the McClurg's case, the fraudster gets convicted and then has to pay back what she can, about half what she stole. As I sit with Andrew in Memphis, he gets his sister Robin on the line from Florida to pick up a piece of the story about what happened after the scammer coughed up the $50,000 in cash.
The next day, she called him and said she was crying as usual. And poor me, and said, Don, why don't you buy a small house, and I will move in and take care of you.
Robin said her head nearly exploded. The fraudster wants to move in with her victim after losing the court case? But by then, the dad had seen that it was best to listen to his kids and to the authorities. Any restitution in a case like this is notable in itself. and it's more often scams that are national, even international in scope, fake IRS, fake lottery winnings, that sometimes get money back to victims. Here's Will Maxon at the Federal Trade Commission.
I know last year we sent out tens of thousands of refund checks to consumers for nearly $11 million.
That's an achievement, but it's also true that people lost $488 million last year in just one subset of fraud, so-called imposter scams that were reported to the FTC. As for the McClurg family, victory was bittersweet, accent on the bitter. 4 months after getting some of his money back, Don McClurg, previously in good health, died at 95.
This does take a terrible toll on the person, apart from just taking their money. What makes these crimes so cruel is I would respect the person more if they did conk him over the head and steal his wallet. But they not only steal their money, they steal their dignity and their heart and their sense of self-worth.
For scam victims and their families, finding a solution, regaining financial footholds, and moving on from a fraud can be arduous. And while Don McClurg's family had two legal experts as children, most people are not nearly as well equipped to fight back. Meet a young guy in Oregon we'll call Jason, not his real name. He's in his 20s and terrified for his mom.
I realize she's not been sending him hundreds of dollars. She's been sending him tens of thousands of dollars.
Jason's finishing a college degree. The he referred to is an emailer messaging his mom for about a year. The son knew she had started online dating, but then a message popped up on her phone suggesting his mom was sending thousands of dollars to this emailer claiming to be a U.S. soldier stationed in Africa. Money for an orphan, the love interest said he rescued from terrorists. Money to help him export gold bars from a local mine. In-person dates always broken.
She's saying that, oh, he's coming home, and then he misses that date for some reason, missed his flight or whatever.
And then, this is so heartbreaking, booking a trip to Jerusalem where she would finally meet the emailer face to face.
And they were going to elope there. And so she sent, I think it was somewhere around 15 to 20,000 for to arrange that marriage and everything. And then he supposedly was in a firefight and got wounded.
Wedding canceled. Jason thinks she got a few hundred dollars back for the flower arrangements. Jason's mom may believe there's true mutual affection here, but the situation bears the hallmarks of a classic scam. Let's bring back Weill Cornell gerontologist Mark Lax, the one who coined the term age-associated financial vulnerability, when people who seem cognitively okay start dealing with money issues in a way that hurts their quality of life and
is in some way inconsistent with the financial behaviors they manifested as a younger person.
And among the alarm bells here is the change in behavior Jason noticed in his mom, who had been, by the son's account, professionally successful and good with money. There was a divorce a few years ago, and the loss of a spouse one way or another has long been associated with financial vulnerability. And doctors are seeing changes not just in people deep into retirement age, but people as young as their 50s, and Jason's mom is not yet 60. So what could Jason do about his mom's situation?
Talking people out of this type of love interest online is very, very difficult. It takes investment over time to do so.
Donna Maddox, an assistant U.S. attorney and elder justice coordinator in Portland, Oregon, with a special expertise in cybercrime. She doesn't comment on specific cases, but one part of Maddox's job is to focus on combating the financial exploitation of older people, including what she calls romance scams of the sort Jason thinks is happening with his mom. Maddox's general advice?
Don't send money to someone you don't know, and don't receive money from someone you don't know.
But the internet can create the illusion you know a person. Jason's mom, for example, has not complained about her online boyfriend slash scammer. There are some regulations that aim to help people like this mother, but it's a patchwork, and often, once the money's gone, it's gone for good. Many legal experts want more robust protections, and there are people out there working on this. A new federal law that appointed elder justice coordinators like Maddox also encourages different regulators, law enforcement jurisdictions, and protectors of older people to share info about exploitation, teaching both potential victims and officials about warning signs of predators, hopefully before the abuse happens. Also in this fight is the Financial Securities Administrator for the state of Maine, Judith Shaw. She's pushing to get banks and credit unions watching out for older people acting strangely with money.
The basic idea is we recognize that the people who work in our financial institutions are truly the warriors on the front line against this fight.
She got deep into this after an incident up near the Canadian border. A credit union employee named Effie noticed a longtime customer, a retiree named Dawn, wasn't looking so well.
Effie took a chance and looked at Dawn's accounts and saw a strange electronic transaction coming out on a regular basis, and found out that Dawn had fallen victim of a web-based scam. I know this story so well because Dawn was my mother.
At the time, the credit union employee felt she was going out on a limb looking through these accounts. But Effie at the credit union saved Shaw's mother a lot of hardship and inspired Shaw to set up a training system for tellers and their bosses across Maine to learn the telltale signs and understand that reporting to, for instance, Adult Protective Services is okay. Still at the national level, the banking industry wanted more reassurance, and Shaw, who's past president of the North American Securities Administrators Association, helped push for that federal law last spring that increased immunity for bankers once they get special training.
If you're familiar with the See Something, Say Something Act that was passed after 9/11 and the terror attacks, it's not all that different.
And Wall Street's self-regulatory body, FINRA, recently told stockbrokers to encourage customers to list the name of a trusted person to contact if something signals scam. Dr. DeLima at the Stanford Center on Longevity also does work with that regulator.
So just like if you were to do a, you know, somewhat risky activity like skydiving, you fill out that, you know, in case of emergency form, contact this person. Brokerage firms are now required to ask that of all of their clients.
She points out the rule, however, does not apply to banks. Back in Florida, a new, more powerful legal tool makes it way easier for vulnerable older victims to file paperwork to quickly freeze their scammed money.
The very quick access to a pause button so that the money isn't gone forever.
Shannon Miller is the Florida attorney we heard from earlier. To explain it, she uses the example of, say, an abusing daughter who got her mother to give her joint access to her bank account.
Mom can go down to the courthouse without an attorney, and she can fill out the paperwork to put an asset freeze on that money that went to daughter. It can be done without daughter being notified. So we're able to freeze that asset before daughter can run off with it or before caregiver can run off with it.
Pending a hearing to see if the money lockdown made sense. It's a Florida thing, but advocates hope it might spread. But many elder rights advocates say protections remain inadequate. We mentioned the new federal law to help protect seniors, but experts say there's still not sufficient rigorous research on what strategies work best to inoculate people from potential fraud. This at a time that the population is aging. The number of people 65 and older will nearly double in 30 years to 1 out of 5 people in the U.S. And scammers are getting more technologically sophisticated. Given all this, what is Jason supposed to actually do as a practical matter, given that his mom doesn't see a scam at play?
I talked to the sheriff's office and I...
You did talk to the bank?
I did talk to the bank. They told me there's nothing they could do unless I was tied into the accounts, which I'm not.
Seattle prosecutor Paige Ulrey has a lot of experience fighting elder abuse, and she suggested a strategy for me to pass on to Jason. Make sure the mother sees a full accounting of the cost of this email relationship, whatever the truth of it.
I would advise him to put together a spreadsheet of all the different times she's given him money. And what we see in a lot of our cases is when the victim sees how much money he or she has given to this person, they're shocked and dismayed.
As of the spring, Jason told us his mom still isn't ready to cut ties with the emailer to whom she sent so much money. Jason says he's told his mother he was speaking to us. She declined to get on the phone with us directly. More than a year into this, Jason doesn't feel he's in a position to pick a legal fight by seeking a temporary hold on funds going out or for pushing for some kind of financial conservatorship. I mean, he's in his 20s, in school, and living at home.
Yeah, and that's kind of why I'm in a spot right now, why I can't really afford to not live with her right now, so.
Coming up, the uncomfortable truth that people going after the money of seniors may be closer than you think. We're exploring aging and financial vulnerability. More right after the break. This is Brains and Losses, the bottom line on aging and financial vulnerability, a special report from Marketplace. I'm David Brancaccio. We're exploring what we can do given medical evidence that older people whose brains are otherwise sharp can become more vulnerable to people taking their money. In Missouri, Chad Schreiber took action when his father was targeted repeatedly by fraudsters.
His life went from what we would consider to be fairly normal in his interactions with the outside world to where literally every interaction he was getting was some sort of attempt to take advantage of him.
Chad watched this play out after his dad, Art Schreiber, then 82, when no one talking dementia, moved in with him and his wife Kelly and his kids. This after Art's wife had passed away. Chad shared his home office with his father, where he ended up like a goalie, blocking scammers taking shot after shot at his dad via spam and scam email, phone calls, envelopes in the mail. One day,
he said, "They need me to go get some money." And I said, "What are you talking about?"
Chad had looked out the window and thought, "That's weird. Why is Dad on the phone making a beeline toward the car?"
So they had our address. And they were trying to give him driving directions down to Walgreens, which is a Western Union outlet.
The caller was trying to get Art to wire $750 to prove he had a U.S. bank account. And if he did, he could collect a $9,000 grant from some quote-unquote federal program. Now the son took the wheel, but instead of taking Art to Western Union, Chad drove to his dad's bank and tipped off the manager, Amanda, whom Art trusted.
So Amanda sat him down and gave him that sincere heart-to-heart that he really, truly, truly needed. "Art, this is not real. These are people trying to steal your money. They are not going to send you anything." And he finally seemed to get it.
Round one to the Schreiber family. But then came all the offers billed as investment opportunities. In one, Art got involved with a foreign-based company that offered to help him trade what are called binary options, where you bet that a stock or something will be above or below a certain price at a certain time of day. Some call this gambling. Others see it as an investment strategy.
Well, he put in somewhere between $5,000 and $6,000. And after he put in that money, they then would start calling him to say, "Oh, you need to be investing this money. Oh, we need more money. We need to put in more money. If you want to make money, you have to put in money."
Federal regulators have repeatedly warned U.S. investors about fraud on international binary options trading platforms. A big part of the international binary options business had been based in Israel, which moved to ban the industry in 2017. And last year, a 36-year-old CEO of an Israeli company that did sales and customer outreach for the very company Art Schreiber used was charged in Maryland and is now awaiting trial for wire fraud. Busts are not common, nor is getting money back. The feds pulled off several elder fraud sweeps in the last 2 years. The two big ones netted about 500 people. Now, who were these perps? Authorities talked a lot about international organized crime, but interestingly, officials also said fraudsters have a domestic business supply chain. Listen to Guy Cottrell, who was then America's chief U.S. postal inspector, revealing how the government also went after what he called the enablers, including
a Montana writer who had been creating solicitations for every fraudster in the sweepstakes industry for more than 20 years has been charged.
They also nailed a Las Vegas printer who made all the deceptive material sent through the mail look so good. Scammers are also interested in money laundering, turning older victims into usually unwitting money mules, to use the law enforcement term. In February, a scammer was sentenced after trying to extort $50,000 from a guy in his 90s with promises of mega lottery winnings turning into violent threats, recorded by the elderly target in a video from the FBI.
You live at a very lonely place, and the moment you arrive, I'm going to put a shot in your head. I'm going to burn your house down. I don't play.
Now, this scammer picked the wrong guy. The older victim he'd chosen to prey upon was William Webster, the former head of the FBI and the CIA, who, you know, had friends who could help. The scammer on that tape, 29-year-old Keneal Ian Thomas of Jamaica, got nearly 6 years. But scammers aren't just strangers from faraway places, Jamaica, India, or Eastern Europe. Portraits of people who scam seniors can be found in many a family photo album.
Very often it's a family member.
Paige Ulrey, the Seattle area prosecutor we heard from earlier, has seen it all.
Most often it's an adult child who has failed to launch, who's still living with a parent, often in a caregiving role. And usually that person has some kind of addiction, whether it's an opioid addiction, a shopping addiction, or most often actually a gambling addiction.
Or a family member who believes they're owed something.
As to the defendant Anthony Marshall, how say you to the first count of the indictment, guilty or not guilty?
Guilty.
In perhaps the most famous case of an elder swindled this century, Anthony Marshall, former U.S. ambassador and Broadway producer, was found to have committed grand larceny in managing the affairs of his own mother, famed New York socialite Brooke Astor, one of New York's great philanthropists. It was her grandson, Philip Marshall, son of the man convicted, who helped expose the fraud. He'd only been allowed to see his grandmother while under the watchful eye of his father, but he stayed in touch with her caregivers, who were worried.
Basically, my grandmother went from the limelight, center stage, as lead actor in her own life, to being gaslighted by her son, who psychologically broke her down into believing she was going broke.
His father was in part convicted of giving himself a big lump sum raise using his mother's money.
My main concern was my grandmother's psychological abuse and manipulation, so I felt that the financials were the fallback. I now know that financials are at the forefront in our effort to not just stop exploitation, but many forms of abuse.
One peer-reviewed study found 58% of the perps who financially exploit elders were not just caregivers or friends, but in fact relatives. After his father's conviction, Philip Marshall left his career in historic preservation to focus on protecting seniors. And in Missouri, Chad Schreiber, who practically had to tackle his dad to keep him from going to Western Union to give away his money, has started teaching free seminars in his spare time, starting at his church, helping others spot the signs their elder relatives are being scammed. And Art, now at an assisted living facility down the road, told me he gets why his son and daughter-in-law taught him to be wary of get-rich-quick schemes.
They rightfully felt always be on your guard because this is a scam. But the only thing is, I felt that they sometimes passed up opportunities.
Chad and Kelly Schreiber now have Art's consent to make financial decisions on his behalf, power of attorney. The Schreibers regard this as a profound step not to be taken lightly. As the science begins to better detect signs of an age-related financial vulnerability, getting the protections right needs a sense of balance. Here's Chad.
Is this just a bad decision, or is it somebody being taken advantage of? The idea of removing somebody's, you know, taking away the financial keys, you know, that runs into a lot of, you know, issues on personal liberties and things like that. I should have the right to make a bad decision.
Safeguarding people is especially complicated. Taking away rights based on age, but not necessarily competence, has a name: ageism.
People have been after older people's money since ancient times, but it's also a new problem in terms of its magnitude.
That's elder rights advocate Marie-Thérèse Connolly, who won a MacArthur Genius Grant and has a forthcoming book about elder abuse to be called Aging Dangerously.
it's so pervasive, and it raises just such complicated ethical and philosophical dilemmas about what we want our old age to look like, and to what extent should we be entitled to make bad decisions.
Connolly makes a similar distinction. Even in the name of protecting them, seniors cannot be treated as second-class citizens.
We have this balancing of autonomy and safety and privacy interests that we have to do. If you make a lot of really bad decisions, assets that you need for housing or care can be gone in a flash, and we can't just sit by.
Take that term we've been using in this program. Connolly finds age-related financial vulnerability is a useful idea, but with discrimination in mind, she wonders if the name is wrong.
I'd rather just call it financial vulnerability.
I asked her if it'd really be discriminatory, for instance, if, say, credit card companies tweak their fraud protection superpowers to better watch over the accounts of older people in particular.
Why only older people?
Protect people of all ages is her point. Mark Lax, the doctor at Weill Cornell in New York, who originally conceived the financial vulnerability label, takes no prisoners on this subject. He thinks in the name of health, safety, and quality of life, we may have to treat older people differently.
I'm a geriatrician who wrote a popular book about age discrimination. I said we're supposed to let older people have autonomy in all their decisions, and how dare us infantilize older adults. But it may be that in the same way we didn't let 12-year-olds work in factories 100 years ago, that older people might need some protections to avoid age-associated financial scams.
Analogy time. In many states, older drivers have to start reporting in person to renew driver's licenses with extra vision tests in places. In some states, neighbors, doctors, and others can report bad elderly drivers. Could we develop something similar to check in automatically with people and their money as they age? Or would it be, as one expert suggested to me, like forcing a diabetic to take insulin, which we do not do? Yet, it is also true, a judge can order guardianship if someone is no longer of sound mind. Dr. Lax is among those who insist we can go further than we do now. Take this hypothetical.
How did we let a 90-year-old enter into a complex trust and estate agreement, purchase speculative securities, without some attention to his or her cognitive performance?
At the top of the hour, we met Judy Fern, who lost about $200,000 after signing up for supposed tech support. She told me she'd wised up after the massive loss, and it sure appeared that she had. She seemed self-aware about her age and vulnerability when I put it to her this way. Do you think if this guy had called when you were in your 30s, you would have acted exactly the same way?
No.
How come?
Because I would have been more suspicious.
Yet, the scam attempts kept rolling in. A year to the week after the first scam, I was doing a follow-up in her living room. Her answering machine had 15 fresh calls from this odd-sounding, maybe filtered voice, pestering her about some big prize she won, supposedly $2 million to be delivered that afternoon to her house if she paid an upfront fee. Then, as I was sitting there recording the interview, the phone rang again, and she put it on the speakerphone live.
Say it again.
$2.2 million.
That's very nice. Where did I get the other .2 from?
Because your money was sitting at the Federal Reserve Bank. So, Drew, in the process of you claiming your prize, you automatically gain interest on your money of $200,000.
At the Fed. Yeah, right. On that day, Judy wasn't buying what briefcase boy on the phone is selling. She called in the cops, who showed up while I was there, told her to be careful, and agreed to watch the street for a bit. Judy seemed to have her guard up, or so I thought. That was last fall. But when I phoned Judy back at the end of March, sweepstakes scammers were at her yet again. But this time she told me she had given them money and thought maybe a prize would actually get delivered. I was able to alert a sister who lives two states away. After days of back and forth, Betsy Goff got her sister Judy, reluctantly, to sign a power of attorney.
So that we could sort of help her avoid whatever cross wires create this kind of behavior.
But the phone is still ringing.
Hello, it's Judy. We're on our way coming in. You hear me? Hello? Hello? Hello?
End of message. To erase this message, message saved. Next saved voice message.
Resources about a lot of this, including how to broach this crucial subject with your loved ones, are at marketplace.org/brainslosses. We also have a handy online resource page and some videos you can watch. Our executive producer is Nicole Childers. This series is produced by Eliza Mills and Sasha Woodruff, with additional help from Lila Goldstein, Katie Long, Janaki Mehta, and Daniel Shin. Our engineers are Sarah Brugger, Ben Tolliday, and Daniel Ramirez, who also provided the scoring. And a special thank you to Evelyn LaRubia and Amir Bibawi for editing. This project was made possible by Marketplace's generous supporters, including the Park Foundation. I'm David Brancaccio. This is APM.